some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's September 14th, 2010. I'm Jimmy Carboni, your host. Ray Dieter is off this week. I'm joined by Joel Shelton from the Shelton Brothers and Alex Hall from Gotham & Biber. Our sponsor is GreatBrewers.com. It's one of your favorite resources for all things craft beer. And we're supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of 27 New York City bars that serve, promote, and support good beer. Check out GoodBeerSeal.com. We taped an interview a few weeks ago with Robert Hodson, who some people call the Dean of Beer for New York, and he seems to know a lot about Cask Ale. This show is a Cask Ale show. We're talking about Cask Ale, and we wanted to bring in Robert Hodson of Union Beer Distributors for the show tonight, but he is in Germany. So Ray and I went to see Rob at his office to talk about Cask Ale. Take a listen, and we'll be back on the other side to talk more with our in-studio guests about Cask Ale. Ray and I are here with Robert Hodson of Union Beer Distributors, the people behind GreatBrewers.com. We're talking about Cask Ale. As a leading distributor of Cask Ales in the New York area, Robert is the best guy to lead off this episode about Cask Ale. How are you, Robert?
Doing well, thanks. Appreciate you coming by.
Yeah, we feel kind of lucky because Ray's been a leading, you know, retailer of casks for many years, and to be here with you guys, the way you've developed your program. Tell us more about why Union Beer got so behind casks and what your plans are for cask ales.
Well, to be honest, we identified cask early on as sort of an unexplored area for the craft category. And our whole mission really is to build the craft category. And so we were looking for, and we continue to look for, any opportunity we have that we can explore or expand the category. So for us, when we saw cask, there was a couple things we realized. Number one, there wasn't a lot of cask beer in the market. There was a couple of bars pouring it, and those bars all pretty much poured the same thing. Ray, you could probably confirm there wasn't many options cask. Yeah,
we started pouring it in 1994.
Yeah, so you were what? I think you were the first, if I'm not mistaken.
We were the first bar that wasn't associated with a brewery to pour cask ale in New York City, probably since the Prohibition.
Yeah,
some of the brew pubs were pouring cask.
Yeah, Garrett Oliver, when he was at Manhattan Brewing Company down in Soho, he had a couple of hand pumps, and we spoke about that when he was on the show. He was my go-to person when I got hand pumps in because nobody knew what the hell they were. And so I contacted Garrett, and that's kind of how we kind of bonded over figuring out how to put these things together that I had shipped over from England.
Yeah, so when I started calling some of my suppliers and said, hey, can I get some cask, the most common response was, I don't have a lot of cooperage, and I really don't want to send it out of market. So, no, I'm sorry, you can't have any, which left me still with some Blue Point, some Victory. And then I know Brooklyn still continued to sell a lot of cask beer. And then you had the occasional importer who might bring some in. But that was pretty much it. And so I looked around for my own cooperage. And so I went out and I bought a bunch of firkins, bought some pins, and I sent it out to my breweries. And I said, fill mine. And so there's no risk for them for the cooperage. It's a very expensive proposition for them. It's a big outlay, a lot of risk in terms of losing it. They don't want to take that chance. So no risk to them. It's a little extra labor for them to fill them, obviously. But I think cask beer today is the kind of thing that really can help build brands.
You know, it's amazing. We had we do a tasting every Monday night. It's free. It's called Liquids of Interest at DBA Brooklyn. And we did a cask versus bottled or draft tasting. And we did three casks because we have three cask lines at DB Brooklyn. And so we tasted Fuller's ESB in casks versus Fuller's ESB on draft and two others. And I was amazed that the customers, and we had a really good turnout. We had about 50 to 60 people there for the tasting. And by and large, the casks were preferred, even though it was not as cold, even though it was, you know, a little flatter, not as fizzy as your standard issue draft or bottled beer. And also it occurred in August, so you're thinking people want cold, fizzy beer. But they were very much in favor of the more flavorful, less fizzy cask beer. The palate of New York is changing, and it's amazing to me. And
I think if you go to England, I love going to England, and one of my favorite things about going to England is going to pubs and drinking real ale virtually all day long, because it doesn't fill you up.
Right.
You get, and it's really the subtleties, it's the nuances, it's the very, very intricate flavors of these beers that really is very, very nice to experience. And you can drink a lot of it. You don't get filled up, and you don't get hammered.
That's called session.
It's a great experience. Yeah,
it's a session beer, and that's an English tradition that I think that America is finally catching up with, because we've gone through this whole period, and we talk about this on the show often. The whole period of these you know, extreme beers and imperial this and triple that's, and now it's like I think we're pulling back from that, and it's really great to see like a cask ale that's 4.5%, 4% alcohol by volume, and you can have 4 or 5 pints with your pals, and drive home.
Yeah, and. I don't know about driving home, but you're not so inebriated you can't walk out.
Right.
And
yeah.
You drink 4 or 5 pints of a 9%, Imperial IPA with 100 IBUs. You're going to walk out. You're going to stumble out of that bar, and it's just it becomes not really that fun anymore.
Also, cask ales tend to pair really well with food. I mean, people always think about like a big sturdy red wine with a steak, but you know what? A cask ale, a Fuller's Cask ESB with a steak—that's an amazing combination.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be ice cold. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And you can have a few pints, and you're not going to get hammered.
Robert, in terms of cask, I've noticed that in the States, the brewers are putting all kinds of beer in casks. Is there a certain style that you think goes better in cask, or do you think there's a lot of room for experimentation?
I think there's room for experimentation. However, for me, there's nothing like a good pale ale, maybe an IPA in cask. I really love it. But then again, a nice imperial stout sometimes. Ales in general, for the most part, can work. Unless you're talking about wheat beers or things like that, I'm not a big fan of that. I'm not a big fan of lagers on cask. I just, it just, for me, it doesn't really work. I know some people like it, but it's not a thing for me.
There's a huge German tradition of they don't call it cask over there, but unfiltered beers that are served by gravity pour.
Yep.
Basically the same thing, but it's a lager. And when it's done right, it's fantastic.
But personally, I prefer ales, and I prefer the more traditional cask ales that you would find if you went to England. But there's a lot of great. I remember when I had a Green Flash double stout on cask, and I thought that was one of the most amazing beers I've ever had at the time. So, sometimes it's my mood, but for me personally, it's I prefer just a nice ale on cask.
Victory's been playing around with a lot of different cask styles with their stouts and their Belgian style beers and stuff. Pretty good stuff too.
Most of our breweries, the first thing they ask when I send them Firkins is, "What do you want me to fill in there?" And I say, "Geez, whatever you got that's good, just give me something really good." And then they say, "Wow, great, okay." And then they put whatever they got in tanks. They might dry hop it with Centennial, or they might do some play around with it to just bring some really cool funky beer in that hasn't been there. It makes it kind of fun.
I got a question for you. I mean, the whole thrust of cask ale back in England was based on the brewery had the tied houses, so the brewery would supply beer to local pubs in the town or in the village where the brewery existed. And when we first started doing cask ales here in the States, we were getting imports from England that made a journey over the seas, which is kind of completely counterintuitive for the whole cask concept. However, we did it, and we got some great results out of it. And I think that the local aspect of casks is really important. And we were talking earlier about the cooperage issue and temperature and weather and travel time and distance from the brewery. I mean, it all keys in there. How do you control the shipping of the casks from England that we're getting? I mean, how do you monitor that?
Well, I don't get directly involved with that. That's left up to the importer. They handle the whatever products they bring in. That's them. The only thing I can control is what happens to it when it's in my warehouse. But what I do ask the importers when they do bring this cask in is to ship in colder months. That's heat is a huge enemy. You take a risk by transporting cask beer in warm weather. Even, you know, we sell a lot less cask. I'm sure you do, Ray. We sell a lot less cask from, you know, June through August. Mm-hmm. We still sell it, but not as much. And a lot of breweries aren't don't want to ship any cask because they don't ship in refrigerated trucks all the time. So sending a cask, you know, 2,000, 3,000 miles in a warm truck is risky. We've had plenty of casks explode on us. So, you know, generally speaking, you know, if you can help it, ship it in either a refrigerated container or in colder weather to ensure that, you know, you get a little more stability with the firkin. But I'm constantly amazed when people ship, you know, cask beer a long way in very warm or hot weather.
It's kind of hit or miss. We've had different kinds of results with it. You know, we've had to send some stuff back. But I think it's pretty amazing how sturdy the beer is. I think it's a lot sturdier than a lot of the traditional breweries in England actually kind of believe it is. A lot of them are really very strict about age issues and distance issues, and I don't blame them because it's their beer and they take it very personal, and that's their brand. They have to defend it.
Well, more often than not, the heat causes the beer really to wake up, and that yeast really go active, and then it builds up a lot of pressure, and then you get these exploding firkins. That's the biggest problem with heat initially. If the beer is a good beer and it's able to withstand the temperature alone in terms of its flavor and in terms of itself as a beer, then that's one thing. But you get these exploding firkins. We had a brewery who put 16 firkins in a New Jersey warehouse, and knowing that we wouldn't be able to pick up for a few days, middle of summer, when we got there, all 16 had blown up beer all over the warehouse floor. So it's just not a good time to ship in the warm weather, I think.
Robert, do you think that there's a lot more room for cask ales in New York City, or do you think that you're kind of maxed out right now?
In terms of the retail community, the bars
maybe
and restaurants?
Do you think that the customers really are more interested in getting more casks? You think that there could be more local breweries making cask ales, in particular,
cask
specialists?
I mean, it's not like every bar that opens up and every restaurant opens up is serving cask. But I would say now that probably one out of every 15 or one out of every 20 that's opening up seems to want to at least gravity pour beer.
Really?
Before they make the investment into bringing a beer engine, they'll experiment with a pin.
I don't think special anymore.
Yeah. You know, we sell a lot. Now, we don't sell – it's not a big volume mover for most places. But what it does is it's just one more – it's kind of a value-added item for a bar for his customers. And I think, you know, I understand if you don't want to invest in a beer engine, that's a big investment, and that's why we brought the pins in, and you put them on the nice stillage, and you have a nice presentation there, and you have gravity pour, you get real ale, you know, naturally. That'll work, and you can determine whether or not your clientele is good for cask. And some bars just continue to pour one pin a week, and that's it. Maybe it takes them 3-4 days to move it, and they're happy with that, and they show no signs of having to be able to sell more, so why invest in a beer engine or whatnot? But I do think that there's the consumer in New York is maturing, and the palates are getting better and better, and I believe that that's going to create more and more demand for more and more exciting beers, and I think cask is definitely a part of that.
Well, that's great. This episode is part of a lead-up to New York Craft Beer Week. There's going to be a really great cask event on September 25th and 26th called Get Real, hosted by Patrick from Rattle and Hum.
Yep.
So we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
Everybody say, everybody do. You're on my mind. Folks are going and a place will be mine. A merry, merry wanna be with you. And this is what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna fully call to you. Cause I feel good tonight. Everything's gonna be right. Yeah!
fewer slim. I bet your fat fan is gonna be there too. This is what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna put a call to you.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radios Network. It's a great night. It's our Cask Ale night. We heard a great interview with Robert Hodson, who's the Dean of Beer at Union Beer. And I'm sitting here with two other really great cask ale people. We got Alex Hall from Gotham Imbiber and Joel Shelton from the Shelton Brothers. Alex Hall has, for many years, been known as the cask ale guy. He's hosted many cask ale festivals in New York City. He's got one coming up, the Williamsburg Cask Ale Festival at DBA. Alex, when is the Williamsburg Cask Ale Festival?
This weekend, 17th. Through the 19th of September.
And it's going to be at DBA in Brooklyn.
Yes, that's North 7th on Berry. If
so
anybody
our
got,
own
is
Ray
aware
Dieter
of that.
Is very proud to be hosting this Cask Ale event. And for good reason, because Alex has come into his bar and kind of redone the whole Cask Ale system. You know, Ray and DBA have had this great tradition of serving Cask Ales. What changes did you make in the cask system at DBA?
I came to an arrangement with Ray. I wanted to ramp it up a little bit. He was doing well enough, but I wanted basically a showcase for what I do, like to bring people down to make sure everything is in like perfect condition. Not that he was doing a bad job anyway, but I really needed a showcase because what I do, I try to sell. Equipment to bars. I'm spreading cask ale. I'm like the plague of cask beer in New York City in a good way as such.
Well, we love what you do, man.
Yeah,
we really do.
Thanks.
Originally in England, were you working in bars when you were younger? How did you first get involved in cask ale?
It's a bar called the Evening Star, Brighton, south of England, 50 miles south of London. Started working there as a bartender in 1992, and I got taught all the cellarmanship skills by the owner. So a couple of years later, I was sort of keeping the cellar, and a couple of years later, coincidentally, it became a brew pub, and we were getting through 35 casks a week, and that's sort of like diving in at the deep end with cask knowledge. I really had to know what I was doing. Cask ale is it's finicky. You've got to know like how to keep it. You've got to regulate it with like what are called hard spiral pegs and soft spiral pegs to get the condition just right. If there's too much condition, you've got to use a soft spiral, which is porous, lets condition out. And if you want to keep the condition in, you use the other one, the hard spiral. So it's just a matter of like skill. It's not rocket science. But it's you've got to learn it. So
and
that's
at this
how I
pub, you know, what systems did you use? Did you have gravity pour? Did you have
no? It was hand pumps. The 11 beer engines.
And did you use any CO2 systems, or they're natural?
No, we didn't need them. No, because we got through casks like within 2 days. We didn't need any sort of assistance. Jimmy, what you're talking about is cask breathers, yeah, like blanket pressure.
Yeah, I mean, I've only noticed that there's people are trying to make their casks last longer, And to me, the beauty of a cask is that it should be a fresh beer, and you should move it.
Yeah.
So that shouldn't need any help.
Yeah. However, if a beer is going to last, if it's going to last more than 3 days, then I actually do recommend a cask breather, which is a device, if used properly, and I say used properly, which means no more than 5 PSI connected to a gas cylinder. It will create a blanket of CO2 between the top level of the beer and the airspace of the cask and the atmosphere. Because it's oxygen in the air, which will stale the beer. After 3 days, 4 days, depending on the beer, the beer will start to oxidize as such. And you'll gradually change, and after probably 6 or 7, you'll be tasting like papery, vinegary notes, which you really don't want to have in there. So a cask breather will stop that. You can get like at least 10 days out of a cask with a cask breather. I know people are going to hate me for saying this, especially those camera people in England that haven't quite adapted, but this is not in a bad way, but Camera, Campaign for Real Ale in England, they're against them, generally, but they're just slowly coming around because they think it's extraneous gas going into the beer, but set no more than 5 PSI on the regulator coming out of the CO2 bottle, the gas won't go in the beer. It will not carbonate the beer. It will just sit on top of the beer. So I have a slight dilemma here. Like, I love camera. I love all they've been doing for the last 30 years. But that one thing, that thing with the cask breathers, I do disagree with.
We should talk a little bit about camera. I think most people who have read Michael Jackson's books know about it. It was a movement in England in the 70s when large breweries were buying up all the pubs and they were getting rid of the real ale. Tell us more about that. I mean, that's a huge movement, and they say that it saved real ale.
Yes, absolutely, yes. I mean, camera was founded in the early 70s. It was widely billed as the largest and most successful consumer movement of all time, ever, anywhere. It's got something like 110,000 members in a country that's got 60 million. So, yes, it's huge. I mean, cask beer is pretty much synonymous with the UK.
So camera is kind of like what AAA is like in the United States. You own a car, you're in AAA. In England, you go to your pub, you're in camera. Maybe.
Yeah. but it's all down to tradition, where cask beer was traditional pretty much everywhere in the world. Germany, Belgium, the United States. Like, you go back to your great grandfather's era, beer came out of cask. If you went to a bar before the invention of the keg and the pressurized chilled keg system, beer came out of wooden casks. Nowadays they're stainless steel; they're not wooden. That's the only difference. But it's traditional for pretty much everywhere. Only in the UK it survived because of the campaigning efforts of camera, the Campaign for Real Ale. Everywhere else, it sort of became extinct and is now coming back. And first and foremost here, there's a big movement here now.
Well, and Joel is here, from Joel Shelton from the Shelton Brothers. You guys have some, yes. Okay, this is the intro that he deserves. Last time the Shelton Brothers were on, we're going to give them a special treat here. There's a funny story. The Shelton Brothers gang was an early Prohibition-era bootleg gang in southern Illinois, described by the Saturday Evening Post as America's bloodiest gang, farmers turned gangsters. There were three brothers, Joel, Will, and Daniel.
We're America's bloodiest importers.
Yes. So you guys, I know that you also import cask ales. What are some of the English breweries that have cask ales that you import?
Well, we can't name them all because we're not supposed to. No, it's sort of secret. But the biggest one, I think, would be Ridgeway, which Alex is familiar with. But we're bringing over different things.
And you also have the German Gravity cask.
Well, yeah.
Of which you brought a sample tonight.
I think we bring over breweries from both countries in bulk, and they're from different places, but we don't always know who they are. They're sort of secret. They're sort of mysterious.
That's okay. You don't have to tell us that.
I can't talk about it.
Let's steer it
for legal reasons. For legal
reasons,
right
now, Sheldon Brothers, in addition to bringing in some imports from England, they also have these really great German Gravity casks,
yes,
of which at Jimmy's number 43 we'll be featuring now for the next few weeks. Beautiful Märzens.
That's
and
a great
color
bar,
beers.
And, yes.
Yes.
I would go there if I were you.
So, Alex, there's different styles. So there's the German, the upright gravity cask, and there's the English traditional cask. Are they the same thing?
No, actually, these German gravity casks, they're not upright. They're in the same style as traditional casks, but they've got different fittings for the taps. But they do lay on their belly rather than being upright. So they're a little bit smaller. They're pretty much similar to pins, like 5.4-gallon casks, like the smallest size you can get.
20 liters, yeah.
Yeah, they're 20 liters, yeah. So about the same size. But they need different taps because the fittings are a little bit different.
But is the beer is the same? It's a fresh beer? Uncarbonated?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I certainly hope so.
So there's similarities between the German and the English cask.
Technically, it's the same thing. It's just it's the difference between a lager and an ale. But other than that, it's the same process and the same freshness.
And the beers that we've had from Germany, we've had some like a Märzen. Is that a lager or is that an ale?
A Märzen is a lager style.
It's a lager style.
Yeah. But it could mean almost anything in Germany, which we've discovered when we opened the
No, they're really good ones. And there's something to check into. We've got the English style cask ales and all that. But we've got some great guys here. We've got cask ales. We've got Get Real, which is a really great cask weekend. For the Craft Beer Week, hosted by Patrick Donaher of Rattle and Hum. He'll be our guest. We'll be back on in a few minutes on the Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. We're just joined by some special guests, Chris Kuzmi from the New York Craft Beer Week.
Hello.
And Patrick Donaher from Rattle and Hum. And they're putting together a great cask festival called Get Real Ale, September 25th and 26th. You can check them out at, is it getrealale.com?
Get Real New York, getrealny.com.
That's good. We've got the dueling English and Irish accents today. I want to just let Alex tell us, he brought us a couple cask ales. Alex, tell us the beers that you brought, where you got them, and a little bit about them, and then we'll move on from there.
Okay. First one I've got is one of Shelton Brothers beers. It's from Ridgeway Brewery in West Sussex, England. It's called Bad King John. It's a 6% stout. It's brewed by Peter Scully, who was the brewmaster of the late lamented Breakspear Brewery in Henley-on-Thames, Oxfordshire, which had been going for a couple of centuries and unfortunately got sold off, like one of the victims of like what's going on nowadays. This is currently on cask at DBA Brooklyn, so I filled up a growler from the cask, like just before we came here. Somebody want to pour this? It's in that growler there.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So basically a strong stout, a lot of like roasted barley character, some chocolate. It's really, really nice, and you get all the flavors because it's on cask. It's not chilled, chilling. As if you know about your beer, then chilling will mask the flavor. It should be served around 54 degrees. So this is going to be a nice one. 6% stout from England. Cheers.
Cheers, guys. Let's make a toast. We can toast on air. It's okay.
Cheers to cask.
That's great.
Cheers.
Well,
King John front beer.
Bad King John. Bad King John.
Well said.
Bad King John. I don't know if we want to toast him. He's bad.
Why was he bad? Because he tried to get rid of King Arthur? Is that why?
I don't know. Maybe he drank bad wine. I don't know.
Full stop.
Coors Light. I don't know.
Well, guys, I'm happy to have you here. I'll tell you that. We had an interview with Robert Hodson, which was really great. And we had Alex Hall from Gotham. And also Gotham and Biber. This is the other question. How did you start that? I mean, that was a Bible for people. Kept it going like a madman.
Well, it started out as a magazine. So I used to do one similar called the Independent Imbiber, which has now morphed into something called the New Imbiber since I left it. I started that in 1993 in England when I was working behind the bar in the Evening Star. Found myself in New York in 1999, I'm trying to help the beer scene here, being an expat, transplanted, trying to find my own roots and trying to get a beer community together, trying to help it. Those days were a lot different to what they are now. There was very little sort of beer community. I've been here, it'll be 11 years and a few days' time, I've been in America. And it's just so different now to when I came here. So much better, so much better. I didn't do this from the start. It was, I think, 2003. I started that over here. I just wanted to, get the snowball rolling as such, for craft beer. Started out as a magazine, and with the advent of modern iPhones and stuff, smartphones, I didn't need to do a printed magazine anymore. So now it's just a resource. It's www.gotham and a hyphen a dash imbiber, imbiber.com. So that's my New York sort of beer resource that I've been working on the last few years, which is my sort of moved on from a printed magazine. It's now just online, and there's a full beer guide on there.
And in a tribute to today, one of the best parts of that site for me is finding out where Cask Ale exists in the city. And that list has grown tremendously since you started that site and since you came to the city and since you've been going and promoting here in New York. When you started here, when you came 11 years ago, how many bars had Cask Ale?
I believe five.
Five.
And
now, how big is your list?
53 at the moment.
It's amazing. I applaud you so much.
Grown quite a bit.
Yeah.
Thanks. Alex.
Cheers.
Let's get Patrick on, too, because...
yes, Jimmy. How are you?
Patrick, welcome.
Good to be back, Jimmy.
So you are now one of the leading retailers of cask ales in New York City. Is that true?
Well, we tried. During the summer, it slowed us down a little bit with cask. So With during the summer, we usually have one or two on, but then throughout the year, we've up to four or five on with multiple cast festivals going on throughout the year also. Usually more in the winter.
I know we had you on the show a while ago, and we learned a little bit about how you got into bars and you grew up in the bar business. Why did you decide to focus on have a strong cask presence at your bar Rattle and Hum in New York City?
Because it's Rattle and Hum. I look at as being a it's a great, our location is great because there's not, apart from Ginger Man, there's really that was it. And Ginger Man was there for like 15 years or so.
So you guys are in Midtown, what, 34th Street?
I'm on 33rd between 5th and Madison, and we have a lot of people coming in, and we're under from, we've opened 2 years and we've got them all onto good craft beer. And now for over the last year, we've really pushed hard at cask beer. So we've got them onto craft beer, now to get them onto real ale. So, you know, it's a slow progression, but once they taste it, people just love it, and I love it, and I really want other people to enjoy it, and it's the way beer should be. And I think with that, all Alex's work he's been doing for years, people are really starting to finally notice that. And with like smartphones, computers, everything coming together, people are getting information out there. They're coming into the bar looking for real ale, and so what I try to do from there is to pour real ale all the time, and that led me to Get Real New York and hooking up with some great minds and putting a committee together and seeing what happens out of it.
All right. Before we get to that great event that you're producing, but what is it about real ale? I mean, I understand if you grew up in England and that was your ale. I mean, you grew up in Ireland, didn't you?
Yeah. I didn't have any real ale in Ireland. I didn't really start drinking. I had it in Manchester when I was about 16, 17. I was over for a football game and I really liked it then. And then I came over to New York and where did I have it? I think I had it at the Tiger.
Blind Tiger,
yeah. And then when I opened a bar in Brooklyn called Cherry Tree, I ran into Alex, and then from that day forward, me and Alex like were phone call every day for what, 3 years now.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Cheers, Patrick.
Cheers.
Yeah.
All right, let's make some toast because that sounds really
cheers.
Good on there.
Cheers.
So when you
every day,
what can we do now? What way can we make this pour easier? What can I do now, Alex? Seriously, we can come up with something new.
We can open a brewery. Yeah. Then again, I'm already part of one, Wandering Star Brewing Company. Yeah. Look out for that beer in the next few months.
Yeah, a little absolutely. Chris Post, Chris Kuzme.
Yes, indeed.
Alex Hall.
There's two of the three Wandering Star here.
That's right.
The main man is Chris Post.
Absolutely.
Just waiting on a license. The brewery is up and coming, like ready to go. I've actually already brewed a test brew.
And doing the second test brew to this Saturday. Apparently.
Nice.
Is it going to be a cask specialist brewery? Or an English style brewery?
We're going to be hot on casks. We're going to be doing kegs as well. But we're going to be like pushing casks.
There'll be a large focus on casks.
Not totally casks. We have kegs.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I really like having Alex Hall here. I mean, I've known you for years. I always like your site. I feel like when a bar gets on Gotham and Biber, people really do notice. You have a great following.
Thanks, Jimmy.
And I never got to sit with you in a quiet environment, have a conversation. I usually run into you at a bar. But Patrick's here. You're kind of the star of the show. We've been waiting for you guys. And I know you had a police escort here from Manhattan.
It was Chris's fault. We had to pick up beer. It's all Chris's fault.
We had to drop his dog off, too.
So New York Craft Beer is coming up. Chris Kuzme is one of the big guys behind New York Craft Beer. When does it start, Chris?
September 24th to October 3rd.
September 24th.
Very, very excited about it.
And one of the top events is the Get Real event that Patrick's producing. The 25th, 26th Altman Building. Tell us more about it. I mean, why did you decide to go out and do a big event like this? Why don't you just do an event at Rattle and Hum?
I remember last year we done an event at Rattle and Hum, and it was great. It was just, it got too crazy. It was, you know, we done it at the front of the bar. We built our own stillage. My brother Joe built all the stillage for all the casks. We served up to 35 casks, and we were like, I was going to curse there. We were going to go like, are we going to do this again this year for one that takes up a lot of room? And we were like, why don't we just do something big and crazy? And it was only like a month and a half ago. I called Chris. I called Alex. I'm like, you want to do something nuts? They're like, what? I'm like, I want to do a huge cask festival, cask and food festival. And they were like, well, we haven't got that much time. I'm like, all right, let's start working.
All right.
And it really came together. We got the website up. It took a little bit to get the website up, but we got it up and running right away. We got ticket sites. We got some.
Tell us the website again.
The website's www.getrealny.com. And you can get all the information there, from information on the beers that'll be pouring, the brewers that'll be there, the special guests that'll be there, which we're hoping to have Joel Shelton there as a special guest.
I'll be a special drinking guest.
Yeah, and of course yourself, Jimmy.
You could have the host of the beer sessions.
Absolutely.
Radio.
Maybe we'll do a beer sessions at the festival.
You could have the Good Beer Seal gang.
How about that?
You know?
That's a good idea.
Do some remote recording. Come on with beer sessions.
But actually, we got beer sessions is down, or what do you call it? Good Beer Seal is one of our sponsors. So, you know, we're going to take a lot of pride into doing this festival, and as Alex and Chris will tell you, and myself, it's a lot of work going into it in such short time. But we're hoping to make this a biannual thing. But the focus is right now, and we're enlisting. Like, we've so many great casks. We're going to have nearly touching 130, 140 firkins. We have a bunch of Franconian kegs coming in, and we've.
So did you go out and have to buy some of the empty casks yourself? And have
I actually buy my own cooperage. I have 30 of my own cooperage, and Alex has a bunch of his own cooperage, and we just send them out to breweries. I've given most of my cooperage to homebrewers, which this is the, I don't know if anyone's really done it before, but this festival has a big concentration on homebrewers and letting homebrewers show what they're made of and show.
We'll have 19 homebrewers there.
Wow. So Chris, you know, you're the president of the Malted Barley Appreciation Society and vice president
of the New York City Homebrewers Guild.
So you had a big part in working with the homebrewers, or was this just like a general call for homebrewers, or how did you guys do this?
We worked mostly through both of those clubs in my reach out, but I also reached out to other people that I've met through the scene that aren't part of either club. But most of the participants are definitely from the New York City Homebrewers Guild and MBIS.
Wow. And you have some food at this event too?
We do. We have some great food. Food was the hard part. The beer was the easy part. Everybody wants to give us beer for the event, and which I'm really excited about. We have some very, very special kegs coming in. We can get to that in a minute, but some of the restaurants that we have coming in are very small, artisanal, locally sourced restaurants, which I'm really excited about having, which are going to be all paired with beer. We've got Dr. Bill coming in from Stone Brewery. He's going to be our master peer, our beer and food pair, along with Chris and Mary Aited from nycdat.com. Some of the restaurants are, we got Fudge Fix, we got Grand Daisy Bakery, Fine Raw Chocolates, Ronnie Sue Chocolates, My Friend's Mustard, Sour Puss Pickles, La Bella Torte, Lucy's Way.
Luke's Lobster.
All right, Luke's Lobster.
Yeah, that's right beside you, right?
Oh, yeah. It's lobster rolls, shrimp rolls, and crab rolls.
You hit up Jimmy's for a couple of beers and oysters, and then you head down to Luke's Lobster to finish your night off.
Benjamin Conniff of Luke's Lobster is an old New York City Homebrewers Guild member and a great friend of ours, and we're excited to have him and support Luke's Lobster.
That should sell your event all by itself.
Yeah. We're going to be going out to knowledgeable beer people and food people for volunteers pretty soon. We're going to be posting that on our website. Right now, we have a bunch of volunteers that are all from the Homebrew Club.
Yep.
But we'd probably need more, so stay tuned and check out the website for www.getrealny.com for the volunteer call.
All right. So getrealny.com. What's exciting about this is that I know that New York Craft Beer Week, this is the third year, and like anything, it takes a couple years to get it going, but this year you've got guys like Patrick from Rattle and Hum doing a great event. You've got a great event called New York City Brewer's Choice, which is a little smaller.
That's you, Jimmy. We'll be there the week after.
That's on Thursday, the 30th at City Winery. And Garrett Oliver's doing something wild. He's doing
Voyage of the IPA. We're really excited about this.
A boat trip.
On Clipper City on Saturday, October 2nd. And the boat leaves at 4:30, and he's going to talk about the story of the IPA, which is an awesome story.
Bring your sea legs.
Brought it up, but also Greenport.
He's the best storyteller.
Be there, I believe Victory.
Some good stuff. And the closing party. IPAs, I don't know if anybody can get in on that list, but 11 Madison Park.
Yeah.
On Sunday, it's like everybody was involved in Craft Beer Week, from the brewers, the hosts, the beer industry people. They're going to be 11 Madison Park.
The brewer's bash.
And right after that, we got 40 beers on top of Rattle and Hum.
They're clearing out the tables, and they're having a party. And Rattle and Hum, Jimmy's number 43.
Yeah.
What are some of the at Rattle and Hum events? Because I know you're doing a lot of things there.
I forgot my list. I'm a bit of an idiot today, but I've been rushing around setting up a beer festival for next week. I've been pretty busy.
No, he's got... Rattle and Hum's got a lot.
Every night, we're actually starting our beer week on the 23rd with Rob Todd from Allagash
to kick
off our Rattle and Hum's Craft Beer Week. And then from Friday right through to to October 3rd, which we closed it down with 40 beers from Stone Brewery. We're taking over all our taps, four casks from Stone, and Greg Cook from Stone Brewery, founder and our co-founder and president, will be there.
All right.
But all during the week, we'll have about 3 to 4 brewers in the bar at all times throughout the week. And just one little quick thing. I got a bunch of my family and friends in Ireland are actually listening to the show right now. I'd like to say hello to my beautiful wife, Roz, and my parents. Aww. How are yous?
You're a good man.
See you tomorrow. I'm flying to Ireland tomorrow.
I just met your brother Joe last week, too.
Joe.
You got a
Joe.
Great family. And your wife, Roz. All right. Yeah. Listen, Patrick's been a godsend. Patrick came into the good beer community, and he's really doing good things. It's just what we needed. We need a guy with energy and a guy who loves his beer and actually knows a lot about beer. I will say he's one of the few bars that cleans his lines and more than anyone else,
every
doesn't he?
Every single
time, every
kicks,
time he changes
we clean out
beer.
That line, yeah. Baby.
So, cleaning lines is very important.
Check it out.
With it's cask and beer.
Oh, yes.
All right. Well, we'll say a few things here. It's a... Beer Sessions Radio. We had a great summer. We went up to Omegang. We've had a cask ale show. We're going to be doing theme shows every week. And we're trying to move forward. It's Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Our sponsor is greatbrewers.com and goodbeersale.com. Have a great week. We'll see you next week. Thank you so much.
Later, guys. Let me
mention the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel.